Welcome to Inside New Mexico. I'm Derek Underhill, and each week at this time, I have a conversation with the chairman of our Republican Party of New Mexico, former congressman of the 2nd Congressional District, Steve Pierce. Steve is coming to us through the magic of the internet in Hobbs, New Mexico. Steve, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Derek, and I hope that you are. You know, early voting has already begun, and so I would invite people to go to our website. Just Google RPNM, our Republican Party of New Mexico. You can find out who the candidates are, because on the ballot, they're nonpartisan races, and so there's no party listed on the ballot. You need to know who your constitutional candidates are, and you can also register to vote there. You can request an absentee ballot. You can see the sample ballot. A lot more that you can see on our webpage. So head over to the website.
I always give this at the end of the show, but I'll tell everybody now, it's real easy to remember. It's just www.newmexico.gop, like Grand Old Party.
Yeah, so I just remind people that in these elections in the off years, very few people vote. And so just 5, 10, 15 votes make a big difference. So talk to your friends, get out and vote in these local elections, school board elections. Let's sweep Republicans into office.
This is where it starts. This is how a lot of people start. You started out as a state representative before you went to Congress, right?
That is true. And before that, I was on the local fair board. That was one of the hardest political jobs I ever had. I tell people that constantly, and it's still true. But yeah, just get involved locally. I'm always amazed at folks who never thought about running, and I tell them they should think about it. Soon you find them on a city council or maybe a county commission. Soil and water conservation districts always need good conservative voices. So lots of chances to get into the water. The school board is probably the most important of all of them, though. The policies being carried out in our schools today don't match what a lot of parents would like to see. And so I would encourage anybody who's worried about the lack of parental advisement on the sex change counseling that school officials are giving to young people. If you're worried about the education that your kids are not getting, get involved in the school board and make education a positive thing in your life and in the life of your community.
Since we recorded last week's program, something very serious happened in the U.S. Congress. The mainstream media and the Democrats are all saying, well, they got rid of Speaker McCarthy. You see, the Republicans can't govern. We need to elect Democrats into the House of Representatives. I was hoping you could tell, especially having been in Congress, what really happened.
Well, always there are multiple sides working in any issue. And so what is happening right now was forecast way back in the speaker's election. You remember it took 15 ballots to actually get the speaker. And the holdup was the Freedom Caucus, and they were wanting concessions that the speaker not use Democrat votes to pass the appropriation bills. Well, that's exactly what happened. Kevin McCarthy made a choice that he wanted to keep the government operating. So he joined forces, he and a lot of Republicans joined forces with Democrats to pass the continuing resolution. The continuing resolution simply means that they're going to continue funding at the levels that they funded last year. So basically, he allowed the Democrat budget from last year to be implemented again this year. And that caused the Freedom Caucus to say, okay, no deal, we're not going to support you anymore. The vote count for Republicans in Congress is so very thin. I think they had 5 votes to spare to win any issue on the House floor. And so McCarthy didn't really have much room to work with. He, in fact, had suggested going into the vote that he would have one of his supporters bring it up because he was kind of tired of being held hostage by the group there. From their perspective, their point is that we campaign as Republicans on controlling the budget and on cutting the budget in order to live within our means. Any family has to live within their means. Any corporation has to live within its means. You can't spend more than what you're bringing in. And yet America has been doing that, and it's been doing it for decades, and that's what's causing the inflation. We don't have the money in the bank to spend, so we're having to print that money, and printed money makes the currency that you own less valuable. That's what inflation is. And so it's basically that side saying, wait, we as Republicans campaign on balancing the budget, living within our means, and yet we're passing this Democrat budget. So you can understand both sides. I feel bad for Kevin McCarthy. He is a good guy. I know him well. We crossed swords pretty heavily a couple of times. But at the end of the day, I don't think I would have been one of the eight people joining with Democrats to vote him out. And it was only eight Republicans who joined with every Democrat to vote the Speaker out. So it was not like Republicans can't govern. It's that there was a severe dispute on values. And that is, do we value keeping the government going, or do we want to start living within our means as a government?
But every time this comes up, the press comes out and says the Republican government shutdown. They don't just say the government shutdown, it's the Republican government shutdown. I noticed that in the news headlines. Even though most people agree with what you just said, that we should live within our means, the scare tactics, oh, we're not going to get our Social Security check, even though this doesn't affect Social Security, the scare tactics work with the public.
Yeah, it's basically, I can't remember the exact number, but it's only like 17 or 18% of the government that actually shuts down. Much of it is required through law. Like you said, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, those are all covered. The pay for our soldiers is covered. It's a very small percent of the government that actually does shut down. And another scare tactic that the media throws out is that we're going to default on our debt. No, that's another one of the requirements, that those funds keep going. So, yes, the media does try to float this idea that scare tactics and the world's going to come to an end. We were shut down 17 days while I was in Congress, and the world didn't come to an end, and nobody fell off the cliff, and people still got their Social Security checks. But yes, it is a scare attack that's used that has no merit.
Moving on to Hamas and the attack on Israel, I can't help but wonder, did we fund Hamas to attack Israel?
There's a lot of question on that, because you remember Joe Biden did that prisoner swap with Iran. Looks like we got a few prisoners back. We gave them prisoners. But the main thing that Joe Biden did was unfreeze $6 billion in funding that had been frozen here in the country. And it looks like that the Iranians are using that money to fund these terrorist attacks in Israel. As a result of that appearance, then you've got two Democrats, John Tester and Joe Manchin. Both senators are joining with the GOP senators and calling on Joe Biden to freeze that $6 billion again. And it gives all the appearance that, yes, that's what is funding Hamas at this point. That would be a tragedy if we're funding the attacks on one of our strongest allies, Israel. Prager University has got a really good video. It's from a Palestinian political advisor named Bassam Iyad. And he is saying that don't believe that the Palestinians are getting a thing out of this, that Hamas is just a gang of thieves. They're a criminal gang. They're not a social justice movement. They're not going to make sure that any governance actually occurs in the Gaza Strip. He said that the claim that Hamas is throwing out, that Israel is kicking people out of their homes in the Gaza Strip, actually, these are people who are not paying rent. They're squatters. It's not just that they're behind on the rent. For years, they haven't paid it. And Israel has been very patient, saying you either have to pay rent or move out. And so that's what Hamas is claiming is the trigger point for this. But nothing justifies the thousands of rockets that they sent into Israel, the 1,000 people that have died. Israel is striking back. They used air power to strike 450 targets in the Gaza Strip. And so just know that they have committed that they're going to wipe out the entire Hamas army, the gang of thieves or what they are. And so I think that we're in a very perilous time, but I support, and RPNM supports, Israel 100%. That's something that the Democrat Party has not yet made public, if they support Israel or not. And even the governor of the state of New Mexico, Michelle Lujan Grisham, has not stated publicly if she supports Israel. That's a big question, because both senators and all three of the Democratic representatives in Congress have come out supporting Israel. So it's a notable silence coming out of the governor's office. And then add on top of that, that the squad comes out in support of Hamas. So you have people in Congress who are supporting Hamas. You had a demonstration in Albuquerque that appeared to support Hamas. You've had demonstrations across the country against Israel. And so I think it's a fair question. Where does the governor stand on Israel?
Well, certainly if she's looking to go to a higher office, this is something we would like to know.
Absolutely. And again, I think that she's really playing her hand trying to get a higher office. You know, we've talked multiple times on this program about the gun order that she issued. And now then she has renewed that executive order around gun violence and substance misuse. She's not backing down at all from her illegal order. So that's the reason that we brought suit, not just against the gun issue, but against her being able to use her executive privilege and give these orders that control a constitutionally protected right. She has no standing to do away with constitutional protections, and yet she's doing it. We're going to continue that court case. She's not going to stop until she's held accountable by the rule of law. So we're going to hold her to account.
We'll be back in just a moment as Steve Pierce talks with Frank Neimeyer of Carlsbad Radio about the court's decision in the redistricting lawsuit on Inside New Mexico.
Attention, New Mexico veterans. If you were honorably discharged from the U.S. Armed Forces, you've earned state and federal benefits, and the New Mexico Department of Veteran Services is standing by to assist you. State benefits include a veteran's property tax exemption, education and training, and transportation services. We can also assist with claims for federal VA benefits. The state of New Mexico and this radio station thank you for your service. More information at nmveterans.org or 1-866-433-8387.
Thanks for staying with us on Inside New Mexico. Now we head down to Carlsbad Radio with Frank Neimeyer talking with Steve Pierce about the court's decision on the redistricting case in New Mexico.
Welcome to Carlsbad Radio. I'm Frank Neimeyer. Strange days. The folks who wrote this map said basically, yeah, we're going to make a district to cut Republicans out of the process. The judge says, nah, that's not gerrymandering. What's with that?
Well, actually, it was kind of worse than that. The judge actually wrote the defendant's intentions were to entrench their party in CD2, and they succeeded in substantially diluting their opponent's vote. So he admitted that they intended to gerrymander, that they did gerrymander, but then he came to the conclusion that it did not rise to the level of egregious gerrymandering. What was going on there is the Friday before the cases were heard, last week in Lovington, and I sat through both days of the hearings. They were extensive, they were deep, and the Friday before that started, the Supreme Court, one of the justices, issued an opinion that said that if it could not be proved that the Democrats were going to be entrenched in that district, then our appeals shouldn't be upheld. So that word entrenched then became the subject of the trial. The Democrats argued that, oh, the race was so close last time, only 0.7%, then
Representative Harrell worked her rear off up there and was made a compelling race, and so that worked against us? Come on.
Yes, it worked against us. Also, she had tremendous name ID.
Yep.
And up against a first-timer.
Her opponent
and
who didn't.
So the judge basically, I think he was maybe concerned about the Supreme Court's oversight of it, and he said, well, it wasn't entrenchment. We made the argument that they fully intended to split up the conservative vote. Our point was that anytime you have a district that's changed by 18%, Senate Pro Tem, Mimi Stewart, she bragged about it. She said that in one of her texts that they had to release when we did our discovery, she said the people's map, you remember that was a commission, was 51.8%. So the people's map, 51.8%. She added, that's not enough in a midterm election. That what she meant is that they would lose the midterm election. And she said, so we adjusted some edges, scooped up more of Albuquerque, and now we're at 53%. So that 0.7%, if they hadn't made those changes, the people's map, Yvette, would have been elected. And that's what they intended to stop. So our point of our legal team, and we had not only Carter Harrison, he's our stand-up guy that has taken all of our cases to the Supreme Court of New Mexico. He was in the courtroom, but we also had two judges out of Chicago who won the New York case.
Right.
That was in front of five liberal justices, but it was a mistake, and it was about like ours. So we had the horsepower in the courts. The judge just decided the other way.
Yeah.
We felt like that the case is so much bigger than Democrat, Republican. We felt like that it was a disenfranchisement of every conservative voter in New Mexico.
Of course it is. Yep, of course it is. But you're going to fight this, right?
Yes, we stated yesterday, and I confirmed with our attorney, Carter Harrison, that we want to appeal this thing. And so I think he filed the papers yesterday. I didn't hear from him, but he said he would. But yes, we're going to fight it because we have to.
Yeah.
You just can't allow a legislature to be so brazen as to split up the two most conservative counties in the state. And the offensive thing is that the instruction to their expert witness, and he was a very good witness. I liked him. He teaches at the University of Michigan, Dr. Chen, but he admitted that he drew his maps. In other words, both expert witnesses were instructed to draw maps to show their argument that their team either didn't or did maneuver the boundaries. So they instructed him, the Democrat lawyers instructed him to draw 1,000 maps that split Lee and Eddy counties in every map. Well, of course, then the thing they did in the legislature, it looked at all 1,000 maps looked exactly like it did. Our team did a really good job of defusing that and showing that, look, if you put your thumb on the scale for all 1,000 maps, sure, the one that the legislature drew is going to look exactly the same.
Right.
So it felt like that we had really weakened his argument tremendously.
So going forward, right, I mean, lost this round, all right, we're getting up, we're fighting it again. Is this the same argument? Will this argument gain some traction in the Supreme Court? I know they've been even-handed with the Republican Party and the lawsuits that you've brought previously. Or do you have an additional strategy or tactic or legal argument that you want to bring there?
No, we're limited to the arguments that were heard in the first court. In other words, you can't expand the playing field.
Okay.
But our arguments were sound. Our arguments were good, and their arguments were bad. For instance, they had, he's a friend of mine, a guy named Brian Sandroff, does all the polling for the state legislature, known him for years. And so he said 53% is not entrenched. In other words, entrenched was the big word the Supreme Court threw in. 53% is not entrenched, but 54% would be entrenched. Now, that was a ludicrous argument. All of us would know that
that's
there's just 1%, 1 out of 100 difference between 53 and 54.
Right.
And the voters don't just see the number 54 on the screen and slam the door and say, yep, we're voting Democrat no matter what. So that was a pretty ludicrous argument. But he also argued that the CD2 was a toss-up. He pointed out in his testimony that Steve Pierce won 6-7 times, but every time he didn't run, then the Democrat won, and it was a toss-up. And I agree with him. It is a toss-up, or it was.
Right.
But then he wouldn't address the fact that they changed by 18 points, 18 percentage points of shift towards the Democrat candidate, and he still said it was a toss-up. How in the world can you take a toss-up, had 18% Democrat votes, and still say it's a toss-up?
Right.
It was a ludicrous argument. I just think that those are the things we're going to press in front of the Supreme Court.
That's Steve Pearson with Frank Niemeyer on Carlsbad Radio. Steve and I will be back with more in just a moment on Inside New Mexico.
National Guard and Reserve members are true leaders, both in the military and in the workplace. They are highly skilled and get the job done every day. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve, ESGR, can help you recruit top-notch service members to your workforce. Hiring Guard and Reserve members is good for your business and good for your community. Visit esgr.mil/employers to learn more.
Thanks for staying with us on Inside New Mexico as I continue my conversation with the chairman of the Republican Party, Steve Pierce. Steve?
Well, Derek, as we wrap our program up here, it's interesting always to note who actually wins in discussions. So you have to follow these discussions sometimes for years. But you remember where Joe Biden was saying the wall didn't work and he was willing to tear it down. And now then he's saying that, well, it looks like he's got to go build the wall. That's really an unusual position, given all the things that Trump was accused of as he was building the wall, that it was a racist policy. But I will tell you that eventually Republican issues win because we're so right. And this issue on the wall, Joe Biden is being forced by Democrats to start plugging the leaks there because it's the Democrat mayors and Democrat governors who are telling him that we can't stand the invasion anymore. We cannot stand the bodies that are coming in that have to be supported. There are rules and laws in many of the states and communities where they have to house them. And so they've been willing to kick out homeless veterans out of homeless shelters in order to put these people coming illegally across the border into there. And the sanctuary cities are beginning to say, wait, we're being overrun. We can't be sanctuary cities anymore. So it's always really interesting to watch Democrats because their policies never stand pressure. And when Governor Abbott out of Texas began to send many of the illegals, he put them on buses and planes, began to drop them off in New York, Chicago, and any other place that was a sanctuary. It's amazing how quickly they changed their view and now then calling on the Biden administration to do the right thing at the border. You know, this last week we had Chad Wolf come in. He was an acting Secretary of Homeland Security, and he brought a really thorough view of the issue. He's easy to listen to. He's articulate. He's well-spoken. And he talked about the differences between Trump and the policies that brought order to the border as opposed to the chaos that's reigning at the border now. And when asked if he would take the same position again, he said, you know, that job was 24/7. He said, I'd have to talk to my wife a whole lot before she would let me take it. But you could see that from his discussion that Trump surrounded himself with really high quality people. I knew many personally, and they were just top of the line. They knew their issues. They had the courage to fight for them. They were willing to put up with the bureaucratic struggles that many have to endure in these agencies of 10,000 people. And they'd be one of only two or three Republicans in that entire agency. And yet they had the courage of their convictions and stood up and made things happen. So again, the order at the border giving way to chaos, but now then the president is trying to reestablish the order in the same fashion that President Trump did.
He's trying to get out of it, though, because he doesn't want his base to be mad at him by saying, well, he has to because Congress funded it, so he has to go ahead and spend the money.
Yeah, well, Chad Wolf had something to say about that, too, because he sold a lot of the materials at giveaway prices. Trump had not only built about, the media says, about 70 miles of wall. It was actually over 400 miles, and he had the materials stacked exactly where they needed to be for the wall to continue. He paid for them in advance, had them stacked where they needed to be, and Joe Biden had to pay security to keep people from stealing the equipment on the border. He didn't have workers out there. And so the equipment was rusting and at risk of being stolen. Then he sold all the pipe and the square tubing that makes up the fence. That fence was huge. Chad Wolf talked about that, too. He said that the contractors were in the Oval Office talking, and the president asked, how high is it going to be? And they said, well, about 8 foot. And Trump says, 8 foot, that's not going to stop anybody. And Chad said that everybody in the office began to look around because no one had ever heard a president who would talk back to his staffers and to the contractors. And so then the discussion came around. And so they finally said, well, Mr. President, how high would you like the fence to be? And the president looks up on the wall, picks a spot out on the wall, and says, about that high. And again, it was kind of this stunned silence. Somebody found a tape measure. It was about 20 foot high. And the president said, that ought to do it. And that's how high the fence was. But that's the value of having a president that was in business, that was a builder. He knew what he was talking about. He knew when he was being floated. He knew when the contractors didn't have a clue what they were about to do. And he could sniff it out and correct the issue. And that's the sort of thing that made Trump into a good president. The policies, people hated the way he talked and his tweets, but I'll tell you, his policies were very solid, and he had himself surrounded by very high-quality people. So again, Derek, as we close the program out, I know that people are down, and I sense it when I travel around the state, but I tell you, when you point out the good things that are happening, when you point out the shift in public opinion away from Democrats, Republicans, when you talk about the registrations that are occurring, that people are changing from Democrat to Republican, people who've never registered coming in to register as Republicans. And it gives you a sense that all is going to work out. The pendulum of politics in America swings back and forth, just like the pendulum on a clock, and it's swinging heavily towards the conservative side. I believe that we're going to elect a conservative president, and I believe that they're going to be able to straighten up the direction of this country, because the people want the direction straightened up. They want education improved. They want jobs. They want careers. They want higher pay. They want the inflation to be shut down. They want lower energy prices. They want us to be independent and self-reliant on our fossil fuels. And so our health care, they're watching the health care people go out on strike, and they're worried about that. They want Republicans to bring order into that healthcare system. And so always, I think that the situations favor Republicans. We just have to get out and vote, and we have to get out and express our opinions in the public square. And I believe that we're going to do well in this coming election.
Thank you, Steve. Steve Pierce, the chairman of the Republican Party of New Mexico. If you've been listening to the program and would like to find out more information about the Republican Party of New Mexico, you can find it several places. First, the website is newmexico.gop. The party has a Facebook page and an X account. The handle is @NewMexicoGOP. If you would like to speak to someone in person, you may call party headquarters at 505-298-3662. That's 505-298-3662. For Steve Pierce, I'm Derek Underhill. We look forward to meeting with you again at this time next week on Inside New Mexico.